bright as a diamond. He felt a passing curiosity about who had fathered this child. What cold heart had crept into Uta's bed while poor Benji toiled in his rock garden? He wanted to ask, but didn't. Better by far to savor such a mystery than to unravel it. The one-eyed man knelt and lightly touched the girl's cheek. Ryan put his mouth close to her ear and whispered softly so no one else could hear.
Consider the bastards chilled.
Straightening, he signaled for his friends to follow him, then continued the short climb to the top of the hill, heading for the circle trailers and the Ville's most well-appointed gaudy. The double-wide gaudy in question was painted bright pink, as were the rocks that lined the dirt walk leading up to its doorway. It wasn't much cooler inside the trailer. A handful of sluts sprawled on a long, broken-down sofa in the foyer, which reeked of once cheap, now expensive perfume. The working girls didn't bother to get up as the potential clients filed past. They just flopped open their gauzy robes to show all.
Hot pipe!
By the three Kennedys!
Doc Tanner averted Dean's gaze by spinning the boy by the shoulder.
In all my years, I have never seen such a row of tangle-matted medusas. If they are the blooming roses of this ville, then I know why the diabolical dung heap is called perdition.
They didn't look half bad, did J.B.?
The armorer muttered something under his breath, then spat on the floor. The gaudy's bartender took one look at the people walking toward him and quickly dipped his hands under the makeshift bar.
There's no need for that,
Ryan assured him by holding both empty palms up for him to see.
We're not here for trouble.
The bartender brought his hands out from under the bar. He held a cut-down 12-gauge.
What can I get you, then?
Information. We'll pay for it, of course.
What sort of information might that be?
We're looking to catch up with some people who passed through here earlier today. One guy in particular you maybe remember. He was tall, gray-bearded, carrying a fine bolt-action long blaster.
These friends of yours?
No.
I seen them. What are you paying?
Show them.
JB stepped forward and rapidly pumped the M4000 slide, ejecting two red-cased live 12-gauge shells onto the bar. The barman eagerly scooped them up and stuffed them into his pants pocket.
Let's hear it.
The graybeard you're looking for, along with three others, two men and a skinhead witch, left here maybe 20 minutes ago, after talking to a scrounger named Grub Hinton. Took Grub with them when they went.
He go along willingly?
Looked mighty happy to me.
Know what they talked about?
Had to be discussing Moonboyville. It's the only thing people been talking about around here since last night. According to this scrounger, some kind of strange things went on there yesterday noon. He claims some muties popped out of nowhere with tricky, silenced blasters and cut just about everybody in half.
Sounds real unlikely.
Think your pals had a raid in mind. They wanted to get their hands on the extra special chilling gear.
They're not our pals. They're cannies.
I guess that something wasn't right with those bastards. Goddamn coffin breath on the gray-bearded one practically knocked me down.
They've been working the riverbed, nabbing the folks trying to cross over from Brighamville.
You know, I would have chilled them myself if I'd known what they were.
Yeah, sure you would.
Tell us which way they went.
Cost you more shells.
Ryan nodded to JB, but instead of cycling out more live rounds from the tubular magazine, the armorer swiveled on the bartender and aimed the wide gun barrel at his throat. With his index finger resting lightly on the trigger, JB cautioned the man.
Next one you collect is going to hurt some.
Okay, forget it. No rad blasted harm in trying, is there?
Doc used the tip of his walking stick like a prod, thrusting across the bar and jabbing the man in the shoulder.
You would be well advised to reveal without further delay all that you are privy to. Or make no mistake, you will suffer the consequences.
A lot of them went due south, along the main road out of the ville. It leads straight to what's left of old Highway 15. Once they get there, they've got to double back north on the highway for about a mile to get to Moonboy.
Is there a faster way to get there?
Sure, if you don't mind jumping some rock.
We don't mind.
Go south toward the ridge, turn right, and follow the base of the ridge line for 5, maybe 6 miles. You can't miss Moon Boy.
How's that?
It's the only thing left standing, for as far as you can see.
The Right Reverend Gore caressed the edge of his Skinner knife with precise, circular motions of the whetstone. The back of the wide, crescent-shaped blade was deeply notched a half-inch from its tip, and the notch formed a razor-sharp gut hook that could zip open a body cavity faster than a man could hawk a spit. Gore put the ball of his thumb against the bright new edge, testing it. Plenty good enough, he decided.
Why are you doing this to me?
Gore looked up from the boulder on which he sat. Across the small clearing, the naked slag-heap scrounger was strung up by his wrists in the branches of a dead willow. His ankles were likewise tied with leather thongs, and his legs pulled out straight and spread-eagled.
I gave you everything you wanted.
Not quite.
Look, I don't want no cut of the profit.
Grubb looked at the 4 cold hearts who held him prisoner. Giggly Jane was using a yard-long willow branch to test the cutting power of her own blade.
Don't need none of her, neither. Just let me loose from up here. I won't tell nobody about Moon Boy and spoil your raid.
You already told half of perdition about Moon Boy. It's time to face facts, little man. You are never going to get a piece of the job's profit, nor of our funky little gal Jane, neither. And we're not going to let you go. We're taking you with us, in a manner of speaking.
Gore shivered, despite the day's oppressive heat. He could no longer ignore the gnawing ache in the pit of his stomach. He had to do something about it. No matter how much he ate, Gore was hungry all the time now. Trouble was, he couldn't keep his meat down. He was always chucking it back up. There was no telling when he'd caught the sickness. Sometimes it took half a lifetime for the death signs to appear. For all he knew, it could have come from his first bite of man flesh, and that was better than a quarter century ago. Some claimed that cannibalism was an acquired taste, but as soon as Gore got that first lick, he was hooked solid. A young sprout back then, he'd joined up with a band of cannies that was passing through his Ditchwaterville one summer night, picking off stragglers and halfwits. He loved the canny life right off, too. It was like being a wolf cub, hunting and chilling and eating. Ultimate freedom, every minute of every day. But it wasn't some hog-slop romantic philosophy that held him captive. It was the flavor. The fresher, the better. At that very moment, Gore was thinking about liver. Bloody, still warm liver. It made his mouth water.
Huh? You're taking me with you? Then you're not gonna chill me?
The Triple Stew bastard still hadn't figured it out. Giggly Jane playfully poked at his protruding white potbelly with the sharpened point of the willow stick.
Oh, we're gonna chill you, all right. But first, we're gonna gut you from goobers to windpipe. After you bleed out, we're gonna quarter saw your pasty carcass and pack it along with us.
Grubb's eyes bulged in horror. Gore grinned at him.
What? You never heard of trail mix?
Christy matched, stride for stride, her black-haired lover's brutal pace. The path they were taking at the base of the towering bedrock ridge was an obstacle course of boulder outcrops in shades of dusty brown and ochre. Some of the rocks were big enough to hide a crouching man. Most were merely ankle breakers. No screen of trees shielded them from the sun, and it would be hours yet before it sank into the west. The only things growing in the thin desert soil were scattered, stunted bushes and widely spaced clumps of needle grass. To her left, sweeping all the way to the southern horizon, was a vast depression in the earth. Though she could see for tens of miles into the bowl scoured out by 3 thermonuclear warheads, Christy couldn't see the far side of it. This was in part because of the sun's blinding glare off the thermoglass, which looked to her like a frozen, storm-tossed sea, but mostly because the blast crater's diameter was so enormous. At irregular intervals, individual pillars of smoke rose in the dead air, spiraling into the blue sky for thousands of feet. More than a century after the nuclear holocaust, Slake City still burned. Isolated